This is Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange.
I live right in the middle of the woods. This big thing was 75 feet away from me, smells awful, devoured a whole deer carcass, and then took off and, like, screamed, screeched, and took off across the street. And I know you guys are going to think I'm crazy, but I'm dead serious. There was something very big, bigger, a lot bigger than me out here. How long ago did this happen? Immediately. I don't know if animal control, I mean, it is a very large, hairy animal of some kind.
Now, was it standing on two or four?
Well, I told you it was standing on two legs. You're going to think I'm crazy, but I'm serious. It ran off at breaking limbs and trees. And it kind of screeched, howled. A very creepy, scary thing. Because, like I said, I live in a tent. We're in the woods. And I just saw this freaky, scary, very large creature devour a deer and run off across the road.
Okay.
I don't know.
Is there any way that we can have an officer contact you?
Yeah, I guess it's this number.
Okay, and do you see signs of a dead deer, blood, whatever?
I'm not going to go check it out right at the moment. Is that okay? Like I said, I thought somebody should know there's a very large something big enough to eat a deer and as a
predator.
Are you
seeing someone there?
Yes, ma'am.
Did they see it too?
Yes, ma'am.
I lived in the woods for years. I swear to God, I've never seen nothing like this. This is bigger than me.
And it,
I'm 6 feet. It's bigger than me.
It's very large. He carried the carcass off. I mean,
oh, he carried
like,
it
with
okay.
Nothing. Like just.
But I know it picked up that deer and walked with 2 feet.
It's a very large something that smells bad and is bigger than we are. My husband's a very large. Nothing's ever scared him, and, I mean, we both saw it, so.
Okay. All right. We'll have an officer patrol that area.
Strange Harbor. Be strange.
And another exciting episode of Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird. And Johnny Manson here, along with David Ellis and our guest today, Shane Corson of the Olympic Project. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Johnny.
So, Shane, you are one of the core members of the Olympic Project, you and David. What has been going on in the Olympic Project world and the world of Sasquatch?
Oh, well, recently a lot of stuff. Unfortunately, we've all had to deal with this pandemic. You know, it's kind of, for our lives, our livelihood, our families, and, of course, the Sasquatch research that we do, it's really taken its toll on a lot of things. So, you know, it's been kind of tough, but there has been some exciting things we've been working on just recently in regards to a new nesting site that we came across. So quite a bit, Johnny.
Okay, now we've talked in the past about these nests. Now, for anyone that's not familiar with these Olympic Project nests, can you guys go into what these things are and maybe the general proximity where these things were found and what you guys think these are?
Back in 2016, Derek Randles of the Olympic Project got a phone call from a timber surveyor. Derek had done some work for this timber surveyor 10 years prior. Derek's a landscaper, so he had done some landscaping work. This timber surveyor came across, while out surveying in remote areas, these ground nests, and they were really perplexing to him. In his 25-plus years, he had never seen anything like these ground nests. They're oval in shape. They're constructed out of huckleberry. They're large. And so he got a little weirded out. He gets a hold of Derek. Derek and James Million of the Olympic Project come out with this timber surveyor as well as a couple of DNR guys. And between all their years in the woods and all their experiences, they had never seen anything like these ground nests. The ground nests range in size from about 3 feet across to about 8 to 9 feet across, over a foot in depth, completely made out of huckleberry, constructed in a fashion. And the huckleberry breaks in this area range from an inch to, or three quarters of an inch to 2 inches or more. Something with an opposable thumb had to break these branches, these huckleberry branches apart, and formulate this nest. Now, we brought in Dr. Jeff Meldrum out of Idaho State University out there. We've had anthropologists out there. We've had zookeepers out in this area, and they're all enthralled with these ground nests. And they say they're very primate-like. We have taken hair samples from these nests, and they fit the primate hare, also other unknown hare from around the states they've been compared to. They look very primate-like. They kind of fit with what we call like the Sasquatch hare. So there's a lot going on in this area. I mean, I could go on about them. But since then, since 2016, a group of us within the Inland Project have been looking for new nests. We wanted to replicate this find. We've been searching and searching and searching. Well, this past February, an area that Derek Randalls and I had been searching for a while, and we came across some possibly older nests, 3 to 4 years older than the original nest site. And we got a little excited about that area with plans to come back. Well, February, at the end of February, I brought Todd Hale, another Lint Project member out there, and we walked in on something actually in the process of making one of these nests. Pretty freaky experience just because this thing was massive. I never saw it, but it was massive, and we literally walked right in on it. And what we discovered, to make a long story short, within those 2 days out there searching, we found a nest in the making with huckleberry breaks and large impressions. We bought Cliff Berkman out there, who was finding Bigfoot fame, brought him out there to help cast tracks. We found hand impressions. We found foot impressions. So that's one of the more exciting things we're working on. We do have hair samples. We got a lot to test, a lot to work on. David Ellis here of the Inland Project has been helping out with the audio tremendously. And I know we've captured quite a few amazing sounds, in my opinion, that go along with this whole story that's unfolding.
You were camping out when you got this audio, or?
We did do a lot of camping out. So what I would do when we weren't camping is I would go out to this area a couple hundred yards away. My recorder basically at that time recorded for 2 to 3 days. So every 2 to 3 days, if I wasn't camping in the area, I would drive out, hike out, replace the SD cards and the batteries, and then be on my merry way. I do have, or did have, a long-term unit in there, which is just a long, it records for 20 plus days. I have 25 days I've yet to go, or 25 nights and evenings I've yet to go through. But for the most part, you know, we did do some camping out there, a lot of camping. But just replacing the audio with just every 2 to 3 days going in and out of this area.
So you weren't out there with the recorder. You would just leave it, hit record, and go, right? Is that how
Absolutely,
it went?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you guys want to go through some of this audio?
Well, interestingly enough, just a little bit more about the audio. And when Shane and the guys were out there, I could hear them when I was analyzing the audio, but it seemed like that I was hearing some wood knocks prior to their arrival and after they had left. It was like kind of an announcement.
Kind of like when you and I were going out to our woods, you heard the knock going in and then we heard it going out.
Yeah. So I thought that that was fairly interesting. There were wood knocks while they were still there, but there seems to be a stealthy way of communicating via wood knocks that, you know, it's got my ear. Shane, just to be clear, do you remember hearing any of the audio that we might be playing today while you were out there, or was this captured when nobody was out there?
It was either captured when nobody was out there or we just didn't hear it.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, the only one I heard that I didn't get recorded was a whoop, but you have something very similar in, I think you probably shared with Johnny, that was very similar to what I heard the first day we were out there.
Okay. So just regarding the sound, I analyze it visually. It's not just what you hear that catches my attention. It's what I see. So this was kind of a roaring vocalization, short vocalization. Doesn't sound very happy. So I'm not sure what's going on, if it was a warning. We have all kinds of critters coming through here. So it's not just the Sasquatch. It's there's, you know, what we got, bobcat, we got cougar, we got bear. I think you've even seen sign of bear, haven't you, Shane?
No sign, which is very odd.
Oh, really? Okay. Bear is known to be in the area, I find.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, quite a few bears. That's another odd occurrence out there. We haven't seen a whole lot of animals. They're coming back slowly, though.
Now, that's also kind of strange in a way because of the huckleberries, right? I mean, the bears are going to be feeding on the huckleberries if they're in the area.
Absolutely. Right now, you got a little bit of salmonberry popping up and a few other berry mixes. The huckleberry's not quite ripe yet, but it's bulbing up. So definitely, I would expect even now to find bear scat, and I've yet to see any of that, which I find very odd in this area.
So the reason I say it's an interesting vocalization, Johnny, is it doesn't fit the pattern of anything that I know as a known critter that I can ascribe this vocalization to. It may sound to other people, you know, just audio-wise, just what it sounds like. Somebody might say, oh, that's just a dog, or right, that's a canine, or that's a, you know, maybe a wolf hybrid's in the area. They can come up with all kinds of things, but what I do is I visually look at this.
Visually, that's not a dog. Visually, that's not an elk. It's not a bobcat. It's not a cougar.
Right.
Visually.
Right. Yeah, it doesn't match the other known sounds that I can actually compare it to visually.
Oh, that's just an owl during mating season. But it doesn't fit the visual, though, right?
No, it fits the whoop visual, not an owl visual. There is an owl that does a single call that is similar to, but it has a completely different looking signature. And then when you realize that and see the signature, the sound is a little bit different, too. Now, coyotes can make something that is similar to a whoop with some of their barks. But if you notice that this particular whoop is really low in on the hertz scale, so it's not most whoops are a little bit higher in resonance than this particular whoop, which I found interesting because I think that this is a very large critter that's doing this one.
Mm-hmm. So, you guys, I had a dumb armchair guy kind of theory about the nests. You want to hear it?
Absolutely.
Okay.
The dumber, the better.
Okay. How about, because, you know, we'd aired some reruns of Strange Harbor in the past, and I listened to, like, when Tom Baker and you and Derek and everybody were in the studio, and we talked about the nests and how they were kind of strategically placed, like in a military pattern almost. So how about the military in some kind of, okay, we're going to drop you off in the woods to see if you can survive and stay unnoticed. So you have all these military people, and they make the nests out of the huckleberries just as a place to stay, you know, a bedding. And it's kind of like Naked and Afraid or Survivor, and they're in the Olympic Mountains, and they're doing this, and they're strategically placing them because they need to, you know, protect their encampment and everything that there's going on. And, you know, we've recently had, you know, military activity in the mountains where they were, like, placing trucks with radiation or something crazy in there. So what do you think?
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. I award you no points, and may God have mercy on your soul.
I've had this thrown at me before. It's one of those questions you have to ask, but here's the thing. The nests range in sizes, and I don't think we even found two bush nests off the ground that were in conjunction with the ground nest that wouldn't hold any weight or a person. So unless the military's got that much time on their hands to build a little bush nest next to a larger nest, and also the strength for some of those huckleberry breaks, mm-hmm, and some of the bough breaks that are over 2 inches, I don't care how strong you are, when that stuff, you to break it and also break some of it off, you know, over 8-9 feet tall. Maybe they have some giants, individual basketball player guys in the military. And to spend that much time formulating and making those nests, mm-hmm, it defies logic to me. Plus, humans are, I don't care how clean you are, they're kind of messy. There's no trash in this area, no human footprints.
Wow.
Everything pointed to something unknown, including some of the original impressions found out there, which were very squatchy.
If you were to think that this might be a human military exercise, Johnny, they would have cut those branches with a knife. So there would have been knife marks.
Or it was you have nothing. You know, they have to survive off the land.
I think that they would have found something to create something that would cut. That would be one of the things that would be necessary. If I was in their position, I would want something that could cut. Even though they may not have gone out there with something, they would have created something.
Okay.
Yeah. And two more quick points. One is the amount of effort that went into making these different size nests. To me, militarily speaking, that's a waste of energy. You're going to probably be simple. And, I mean, these were so – I mean, Derek Randles and I doing reconstruction of a nest, building a nest. Took us over a half hour between the both of us to put one of these nests together, and it still wasn't even as close or well constructed. And the second thing is, unless the military has some unknown primate on board, there's hair out there that doesn't match human, but it's primate-like, though.
I'm just trying to throw those skeptic questions that people will ask or, you know, put in the comments, well, what about this?
What's interesting was that there was a military design to these. There was a thought process, and it was all based around obscuration and protection. They wanted to know whoever built these nests, who was coming in and who was going out. And they built it in a place where they wouldn't be seen, but whoever's coming into the area could definitely be heard, either through the creek or through the brush up above. Mm-hmm. And they had all sorts of ways to escape. And there was one large nest, which we think that was the alpha nest, that we discovered two rocks that were right beside the nest. And the nest was strategically placed where they could see what was coming up the creek and if there was something that was coming up from above. And the rocks were scored, which meant that they had been actually hit together, which we have recorded rock knocks, and it is something that is assumed that Sasquatch do, that is Sasquatch behavior.
So that's not an elk during mating season, then?
No, and it's not a bark either. It has kind of a bark sound to it because of the echo, but that was a power strike, which is also something ascribed to what Sasquatch do. Many researchers have heard it, have recorded it, but it is a tremendous kaboom of something hitting something else that is so large a person couldn't do it. And it's not a gunshot. So it's a very interesting sound. Obviously, it's meant to intimidate or catch your attention, stop you in your tracks. Hmm.
So, Shane, did I hear you correctly that you think you may have stumbled across one working on one of these nests?
Yeah. So our goal, the day that I brought my buddy Todd Hell out there, we were going to do some camping in this area. But before we got out there, 3:34 in the evening, I said, before we set up camp, let me hike you out to this ravine so I can show you where we're going to be searching, you know, researching, looking around, exploring the next day, same area that Derek Randles and I had explored 2 weeks prior. So I just took the path of least resistance, which was a joke. It was all very resistant. I mean, the huckleberry is crazy. It's, you know, 6, 7, 8 feet, 9 feet tall, thick, no path. I just took a beeline shot at the ravine, and my buddy Todd Hill was behind me. And as we approached the ravine, I started hearing descending into it a little bit, and off to the right, there's a saddle, a plateau. I hear some heavy movement and sticks breaking like crazy. And instantly I'm thinking bear. So both Todd Hill and he's deaf. I mean, he's like deaf, but he could hear this thing. That's how loud it was. We both drew our weapon. This thing was coming at us, then it peeled away, went down into the ravine, and over about the span of about 5 minutes, it circled up behind us. And so we're in a lower position. I thought, let's get back up top so we're not being circled. We get up top. We kind of hear this thing moving still. Another 5 minutes passes. We don't hear anything. So we go back down to where we originally heard it. And that's when we stumbled across just basically a lot of heavy impressions, a lot of salal that had been, it looked like someone had taken a weed eater through it. And I noticed all the huckleberry in this area, you know, upwards of 8 feet, that all the boughs and have been broken off. And I thought, we got pretty excited. I think we just stumbled across something here, maybe a nest in the making. We backtracked out of there, spent the night, got a hold of Derek Randles. The following day, Derek Randles and his wife, Tori Randles, came out with Todd and I. Looked like nothing had been back in that area, but we explored that plateau further because we didn't really want to contaminate, touch anything in case we get any samples. Well, we discovered a nest in the making, just the biggest pile of huckleberry you could imagine, but it's all different sizes. A lot of the leaves, this was fascinating, a lot of the leaves were just stripped off the huckleberry and piled up. There were like little piles of huckleberry in different spots, but I'm assuming it was going to be gathered for this bigger pile that was going to be formulated into a nest. Now, you know, we've had a lot of audio recordings. We've heard movement out there. We've not been able to capture anything on video yet, but it's been a really exciting find. Like I said, having Cliff Berkman come out, James Million coming out and finding two amazing hand impressions kind of down below where this thing circled us. And not a huge hand, but very thick fingers, opposable thumb, the whole nine there. And then we've got these impressions we found underneath the huckleberry debris, 14 inches in size, both right feet, like it shifted underneath the nest before it, while it was gathering material. So, and of course, 14 inches is significant because if you look at, you think of the Patterson-Gimlin film from 1967, well, Patty was a size 14. So we have a lot going on in this area. It's not just some of these hair samples I assume is going to come back, what I'm pretty sure I know what's going to come back as. And then we have these four foot impressions, same size, and three hand impressions because there was another hand impression found. So, yeah, exciting stuff.
Let's say this was a creature and he or she was gathering huckleberry branches to build another nest. Was it building a nest right there, or did it look like it was collecting to take it somewhere else to build a nest?
That's a great question. Before I answer that, let me add something. This is 4 years later that we stumbled across, literally. I mean, we knew an area to look into, but we stumbled right in on this thing making what it was making. And it was also in the month of February, which is exactly the month we think the older nests were made. So we kind of have maybe a pattern going here. Mm-hmm. Moving forward, when it comes to the nest building, there was a large pile there, very large pile, and there was other little piles in other spots. There was one really large impression in the ground behind a tree that looked like either something heavy had been laying there, and it was maybe 4 feet away from this huckleberry pile, or it was kind of pushed down to maybe build a nest around that. I'm of the opinion, because of the amount of huckleberry in that one spot, it was just being collected to make more than one nest, but that's purely speculative. I have no idea, but there was so much huckleberry, and I actually felt kind of bad, you know, and so did Derek, because something had taken all this time to collect that huckleberry, all this time, and we kind of disturbed it. You know, Derek was of the opinion that it may come back, and I was of the opinion, I don't think so. It's not going to take a risk. If indeed it's a Sasquatch, it's not going to take a risk and come back. It may come back and check the area out, but it's not going to continue on with the nest building, and I kind of felt guilty. But then again, that's kind of what we're out there to do. Next time, I hope I stumble across a older nest rather than one in the making. Because, like I said, it took a lot of time and effort to put this thing together.
It's Strange Harbor with Johnny Manson along with David Ellis. And we're talking with Shane Corson, one of the core members of the Olympic Project. We're talking about those nests made of huckleberries. We're playing some unknown sounds recorded at various locations with the visual fingerprints not being of anything in our area. More coming up on Strange Harbor.
You're listening to Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange. Online at strangeharbor.net. Strange Harbor. Be strange.
Welcome to Strange Harbor. If you've had an out-of-the-ordinary experience, then come to strangeharbor.net and let us know what it is.
It's Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird. Johnny Manson, along with David Ellis, and we have Shane Corson from the Olympic Project talking about Sasquatch in the Olympics and a recent experience he's had, but also more details on these huckleberry nests. Shane, are these the only nests to be found of this type in North America?
There's been other nests found, historically speaking. Never this many. I mean, we're up to 23 nests now, basically. Never this many. And, you know, going back to 1967, the Patterson-Gimlin film, a lot of people don't know that Lyle Lafferty was a timber cruiser. He worked for the timber company down there in Bluff Creek, and he came across a nest in 1967 on an area called Scorpion Creek. Well, Scorpion Creek feeds into Bluff Creek, and it's a stone's throw away from the Patterson-Gimlin film. Well, of course, Patty, if you look at Patty, she was a female, you know, and a lot of people speculate that she was either had birth or was about to give birth, just based on her girth and some other features. So I often think these nests were coming across, especially up here, and now maybe every 4 years, maybe there's a birthing cycle. And the different size nests, the bush nests, maybe we're dealing with a birthing or a scenario or some sort of nursery scenario. Now, getting to the huckleberry leaves, Squatch Metrics, a good friend of ours works on data, and he helps the Limp Project out a lot. If you don't know who Squatch Metrics is, look him on Facebook. Give him a like. Fantastic Sasquatch database information. Well, we were talking the other day, and he mentioned he had some questions about huckleberry. And he said, you know, what kind of huckleberry is? And I said, well, it's evergreen huckleberry. And he said, wow, that's fascinating. I said, why? And he goes, because it's only in certain areas, and it's also medicinal. It's got medicinal purposes. And I said, well, what are those purposes? And he goes, well, birthing. For a mother that gives birth, it gives her strength. You know, they'll give it to a human with a mixture of sugar, and it's like a rehabilitation sort of thing. So I was thinking, wow, all these huckleberry leaves have been snapped off in some cases, or peeled off or plucked off in some cases in piles. What a, you know, if a Sasquatch gave birth, what if they just ate a ton of these leaves,
yeah,
you know, to regain strength in an area where you already have tons of huckleberry, salmonberry, salalberry, Oregon grape. You got all the ungulates in this area, and you have seasonal salmon runs that are ridiculous. What a setup.
Right.
So
wow,
that's interesting.
The nests are a specific shape and a specific design that just hasn't been reported. People stumble across mattings, if you will. And then there's some that are maybe shelter-like. These are just huge birds' nests. And very similar to what the lowland gorillas mm-hmm. build in Africa. That's the only thing that looks similar to what we have found. So these are of specific construction. We've only run across another scenario like this 5 years later.
Yeah. See,
and I was under the impression that there's never been nests like this found in North America. But you just said that there was a nest found in California.
Oh, yeah, and actually there's more than that. There's some been found down in Northern California, like Klamath area, Alaska, I believe British Columbia.
Wow.
And so, but the majority of these possible nest finds that are very similar to what we're dealing with, the majority of them are found by somebody involved in the timber company because they're in remote, hard-to-get areas. These aren't areas people hunt. These aren't areas people hike to. They're remote, somewhat dangerous, and very thick huckleberry for the most part. And so usually it's found by a timber cruiser or a timber surveyor because they have a job to do. They have to be there.
Right.
But they're also found usually next to creeks or rivers, predominantly speaking. And, there's a lot of similarities there. But predominantly speaking, they're found by somebody involved in the timber industry.
I wonder if there's been even more discovered that weren't really, they were just kind of swept under the rug. Ah, let's clear through here. We don't, nothing to see here, nothing to see here. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it actually does. You know, when you see something that's a one-off in the forest, it holds your interest for a little bit, but they're so rare. You know, you just put it on the top shelf. You don't think about it.
Yeah, and you know, and a lot of these, especially with these timber companies, they have a job to do.
Right.
And if they stop, you know, and bring somebody in to check it out, they're losing time, they're losing money, they're getting behind schedule. A lot of these guys, and I don't blame them. They just probably just don't care. I mean, they got a job to do and they want to get it done.
And they
got
to feed their
families.
Yeah,
they probably just mow over them, drop trees on them. I'm sure there's been others found, and I'm sure there's some that have been missed. You know, they drop a tree, and there goes the nest.
There's an area by my place that had a whole bunch of just different tree bends and really weird things going on. Just that spot was cleared out, just that spot.
I was going to mention, too, there have been some recent, actually, Johnny, kudos to you for the Sasquatch Summit. Last November, I was there at my table, as a presenter, I was sitting at my table, and I had a young brother and sister come out to me from the whole reservation up in the Olympics, and they talked about finding some nests next to a creek, and they had a real stink to them, and they were trying to allow some outsiders to come out there and view them. So that was one story I got from the Sasquatch Summit. Then I had another one, and it was a lady that came up and said that she was aware of a biologist that had come across a nest up in Staircase up in the Olympics, up in that general area, like Cushman area. So there are other reports of people possibly coming across them. That's exciting stuff, and kudos, because I wouldn't have heard that unless I attended the Sasquatch Summit.
Woo! Well, if you guys don't mind, let's hear some more of these interesting sounds that have been recorded from this area.
Yeah, yes. Johnny, do you have one called two knocks or two screams, two knocks response?
I would be freaked out if I heard that out in the woods.
What was interesting was the pattern. There was two knocks. There were two screams. There was a pattern to it. It was a very visible pattern to what was going on there.
Succession.
And I don't think people can appreciate the visual pattern. I don't think an average person would understand what you guys often talk about. Oh, that just sounds like a deer that's fallen down a ravine and it's hurt. Well, no, that's not what it looks like, though.
Right.
But these nests, are you guys studying them often, like the original nests, or is that did you get everything you could out of the original nest locations, or what's going on there?
Yeah, first of all, I don't think you could ever get enough out of this area. We monitor it. Honestly, we've not been back I have not been back to that area since early January, and I've kind of done that on purpose. I'm kind of curious to see if anything traverses that area and maybe possibly makes more nests. Now, the old nests out there, they're kind of dilapidated. They're disappearing. Nature's taken over. The huckleberry's growing back. Animals are starting to move through this area, kicking it. We've taken samples from some of them. Many of the original nests that are spread out over this ridge on different fingers, I haven't seen in a couple of years. So I'm kind of can't wait to get back out there and start exploring that area some more. We have worked the ravine and the slopes, and we have found some very interesting fresh impressions in this area. So I know something's moving in and out of this area and more than one individual based on the size. But nothing's been back to the old nest site, at least working in that area. There's still a lot to learn from this area. So we monitor it, but we like to leave it kind of alone for lengthy periods of time.
And how many nests were at that original location again?
There was originally 21. Wow. The reason I added a 22nd is because there was a second bush nest discovered alongside it that I think we just kind of missed, easy to do. But there was a second bush nest, 3 feet off the ground, formulated just like the ones on the ground, but in a bush. It wouldn't hold any weight, but it's very reminiscent of what gorillas do. Mothers teaching their infants to build nests, and the infants practicing building nests. So maybe that's what Sasquatch does. I don't know. But now we're up to, I guess I say 23, even though this new find we've discovered wasn't quite a nest. It was in the making, but right. I count that as a another possible new discovery nest.
So those out of those 21-22 nests, were they all about the same age, or were they built at different times, like in different seasons, or can we tell that information?
You know, that's one I really struggle with. A lot of the nests, especially in the primary nest site, the one that this timber surveyor came across, they were all built at the same time, no doubt about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was a couple other ones I believe were built all by the same time. There's a good chance they were all made at the same time, and when we discovered them, they just were, had browned up. But there's a small chance that maybe some of them were older and made prior. But relatively speaking, I think they were all made about the same time based on how they browned up and the state they were found in. They were actually pretty well established. They didn't look like they had been out there for years.
One of the things regarding the huckleberries that kind of had my attention was the deforestation of the area, and that when we kept going back, we noticed that that nothing had been working the huckleberries again in the area. So it's like that might be part of the process, is that that they let things grow back. So that could be part of the reason why they don't come back for a specific amount of time. And so even though they did come back to this area, it was adjacent to, but not in the same specific original nest area.
Yeah, same river drainage, but different ravine. But also, once again, another western-facing slope, which is, I think, very important to take note of. And good point, David, about the huckleberry, because if something stays in one area too long, it gives itself up and it depletes its resources. So you got to kind of leave the area and let the stuff grow back, and don't leave a huge impression, no pun intended.
So it's showing signs of intelligence. It's not just roaming around like a typical critter has a territory, it stays in that territory, and it works that territory. And you can track it because of that. It seems to me, from some of the clues that we've gotten, that their range is very large. And we may not really, I'm talking 25 square miles. Maybe even more, maybe 50 square miles, an area that they'll work. Well, kind of makes sense that they don't destroy the area or leave much evidence if they have that much territory that they're covering.
That's smarter than what we humans do.
Yeah, absolutely, because, most humans, that's the thing, too, is you go out to a lot of areas and you think, oh, what a beautiful, pristine area, and then you see a mylar balloon or a piece of trash. We leave stuff everywhere. Yeah, sometimes unintended, and many times, unfortunately, intended. But Sasquatch seems to do a pretty good job of leaving its area before and not making a huge mess, leaving it pristine. I wish we could be more like Sasquatch.
And you guys, you'd mentioned you've brought other people to these nesting locations, like trackers and biologists and
bear biologists. Yes.
What do they say? I mean, what do they think?
In the words of Jeff Meldrum, Dr. Jeff Meldrum, when he pulled up, he goes, "Oh my!" And that's Jeff Meldrum getting really excited.
Yeah.
Oh my.
Same sort of reactions. Same sort of reactions. Their thought process is, wow, what is going on here? I remember I had two friends fly out from a zoo here in North America, outside of Washington. They flew out. They're zookeepers. They work directly with primates. One of the individuals, one of the guy that came out, he'd worked directly with gorillas. He spent some time in Africa. And, of course, the female that came out, my friend, I got to keep them anonymous because they like their jobs. But she works with chimpanzees and bonobos. And so when they came out seasoned zookeepers, they came out and got to view the nest. They were just absolutely floored. And I remember the female, she had said, I see individual personalities in each of these nests, because I work with chimpanzees and gorillas, and they formulate nests, and each one makes them a little bit different, and you can always tell who's made the nest. A lot of times the males, they're sloppy, right? They just kind of slap it together. They don't spend a whole lot of time doing anything too fancy, usually. The females, they're very more intricate. You know, they want it all nice, prim and proper, cleaned up and comfy. And so she's like, this nest over here, Shane, you know, viewing the nest. She's like, this would be so-and-so at the zoo, and this would be so-and-so. So I never came from that angle, and that was mind-boggling to me. But they said, both of these individuals from the zoo said, they look so much like some of the stuff we see daily being made. It's crazy. So that was amazing.
Could we have just some escaped gorillas in the Olympics building nests?
Well, some of the sounds would lead you to wonder.
Yeah.
Right.
Shall we play some more sounds?
It's just interesting. I mean, it doesn't match anything, you know, that we would consider known.
Okay. You have one here that says interesting and familiar scream.
Oh, yeah.
That one has kind of it fits in a category that I call singing. Kind of holds a note in a pattern that you might think it was a singing or mimicking a singing pattern.
That one I found really interesting because I'll be honest with you, if I'm in the middle of the woods out by this area and I heard that, I'd be a little spooked out. It's just got some odd qualities to it. But it's like you said, David, you labeled it familiar, and maybe explain why.
Well, it fits that category. It's many people have recorded this type of vocalization all over the country. So I'm not the only one that's recorded this specific trait. So I've got a list that I've created that's like 25, 26 different kinds of vocalizations, calls, noises, percussive sounds that seem to fit the phenomenon that we're chasing.
Is that a point there where they're overlapping, or was that just the mix?
No, it's they're overlapping. Good catch. Now, that was looped three times, but those were two long vocals. I don't know if I'd have to go back and look if it was the same subject vocalizing twice, or if one was a vocal and the other was a response. But I think that there's some overlap, which would indicate that there's possibly two
right.
subjects. But it's the vocalizations are extremely powerful. Recordings don't ever do these long vocalizations justice. The sheer power of the vocalization, if you were there to have heard it, would have set you on your keister.
That is a toucan. I hear him all the time. That's a toucan.
Got that voice signature. Obviously, David pulled this out because it was interesting once again, mm-hmm. and it doesn't fit, visually speaking, you know, anything definitely in this area.
It also has kind of a characteristic that I look for, which is something I'll call crow talker. It has a crow-like voice, but it's not a crow.
So, Shane, when are you going out to the Olympics to go camping again?
I'm actually right now, I'm gearing up for a trip down to an area outside of Packwood, Washington, where I'm heading out with some friends, Todd Hale and Chris Spencer, both Olympic Project members. We're going to head down there because there was a report of a guy being escorted out, and he actually was so intimidated, he actually shot at one, Ooh. Supposedly. So, and it's an area with a rich history. I can't tell you exactly where, but as far as Olympics, oh, yeah, I'm out there as much as I humanly can. I actually have audio out there right now that I actually got to go collect. Hopefully I have time today. It's a little bit of a drive. So big plans for the rest of the year. I hope to continually monitor this area and just see what the heck's going on, both with audio and being out there and experiencing it. So hopefully we'll get David out there sometime.
Yeah.
Soon.
You have your own show, right?
I do. I host a show called Monster X Radio. Airs usually weekly, sometimes biweekly. I got a couple of really neat shows coming down the road here in regards to some other information about this new nest find, including having my buddy Todd Hale, who was there for the experience, jump on the show with me to get his thoughts and his impression and his angle. So, yeah, Monster X Radio.
How do I find Monster X Radio?
Yeah, you can find us anywhere, basically. We're on YouTube, Stitcher, anywhere you get your local podcasts. Mm-hmm. We run through Blog Talk. You can find us just about anywhere. Subscribe to Monster X Radio. We got a lot of really cool archive shows with tons of guests, both in and outside the Olympic Project.
Thanks for taking the time to talk with us here on Strange Harbor.
Really, really happy to join you, and thanks for providing a little bit of platform to share what we're doing, what we're up to.
Well, that'll do it for this episode of Strange Harbor. If you'd like to listen to back episodes, read the latest updates in the UFO sightings, Sasquatch community, ghosts, paranormal, conspiracies, or if you'd like to share your experience, log on to strangeharbor.net.
Listening to Strange Harbor, ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange. Online at strangeharbor.net. Strange Harbor, be strange.